For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me, and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to yet another installment of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told. So lovely to have you. We're in March. It's been a year. I have conflicting feelings, you know. Of course, a year away from normal life has been tough, but I look outside, it's starting to get warm. I went for an epic walk yesterday. The sun is shining. I'm feeling a little bit of hopefulness, you know. And speaking of hopefulness, positive, awesome people, we have a great episode today. John Foreman of Switchfoot, of awesome solo stuff, new record, Departures, out now. Check it out. He is here. This is a great conversation. We go deep. We talk about all kinds of stuff. There's a couple little treats in here as well. I absolutely love this one. I did it live on Twitch. Now, there's a couple little visual things I know maybe aren't the same. I think you can kind of picture it in your head. I try to do, you know, that for my podcast people. But I do want to encourage everybody to head over to Twitch. Twitch.tv/ShaneTold. Give me a follow. It's completely free. And every single Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I am doing live podcasts with video. And it's really great. Next week, I have Kyle from Picturesque coming on Tuesday. And the week after, I have Nothing Nowhere. Pretty massive. I'm pretty excited for these. So yeah, what are you waiting for? Twitch.tv/ShaneTold. If you think you're too old for Twitch or something like that, or it's just like kids playing video games, you are completely wrong. Twitch has changed. It's an amazing platform. And like our guest today, super positive, uplifting. I'm a huge fan. So I'm going to say that link for the third time. Twitch.tv/ShaneTold. A shout out to all my homies in the All Access Club as well. That's a paid thing. For as little as $6 a month, you can be a part of the All Access Club, get bonus content, bonus episodes, access to an amazing community, merchandise, and more. All the information for that is at leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. February was a busy month, man. All that Silverstein stuff was pretty crazy. I'm looking forward to March and some warm weather. So if you guys want to get in touch with me as well, you can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. Follow me on socials. Do the whole thing. Yada, yada, yada. But seriously, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Without further ado, Here is my conversation with John Foreman of Switchfoot. We were meant to live for so much more. We lost ourselves. Somewhere we live inside. Somewhere we live inside. We were meant to live for so much more. And we lost ourselves. Somewhere we live inside. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm in space, right? Like, what's not... What's better than space? There's no COVID up here.
So I've always wondered, what does it feel like to just be floating?
Oh, it's good, right? It's like...
Oh, no.
Okay, pull me back. Okay.
I hear you sleep really well because the most common reason why you wake up is you have to go to the bathroom. And in space, apparently that's really not a factor because there's not really any pressure. So you just sleep longer. I don't know. This is not. I've never been to space. It's just what they tell me. So
it makes somewhat of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So you have to tell me next time you go to space. Do you sleep well? You know.
Yeah. Well, I remember we have a really cool astronaut from Canada. His name's Chris Hadfield, and the reason I know so much about him is because he went to my high school.
Whoa, okay.
Obviously, he's older than me, but yeah, so we learned about this cool guy. It was like, hey, you know, you could have a future too, because, you know, an astronaut went to the school. But he's actually like the coolest astronaut ever. He's up there in space writing songs. Like, he's got a guitar in space.
No way. And, of course, he's from Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense.
Right. And he was showing, I remember he was showing on video all these like different ways to exercise in space. Because I guess when you don't have gravity pulling you down all the time, your muscles like don't, I guess you don't have the same amount of muscle work that you just have, you know, on your body all the time.
Yeah.
So that, I thought that was a really interesting thing, but yeah. So.
See, you got to get your workout video going, your Canadian songwriting on, you know, the whole thing.
That's right. No, exactly. No. Yeah. He's a cool guy. Chris Hadfield, shout out. Everyone wants him to be the next prime minister.
Okay.
I don't think, like, just because people want you to be, you should be. Or maybe you should be. I don't know.
Don't cave. Don't do it.
Well, I'm here with John Foreman of Switchfoot. I got a cool little banner I can put up, too. Look at this. Look how professional we are.
Whoa.
I know.
You just did it like that.
I know, right? It's. Oh, I had it typed up already. But it's good. Hello, everyone in the chat and on Twitch and everybody listening on the podcast side of things. And this is exciting. We you know, John, been a big fan of yours a long time. Really, really love your whole career trajectory and everything you've done. It's been kind of a wild ride, and I don't even know where to start, but maybe let's just start with some of the stuff you're doing right now. A new solo record, which, you know, you're no stranger to the solo side of things. I read you sold over 300,000 solo records, which is crazy. Congratulations on that.
I don't know. That sounds like fake news. I'm not sure.
But you know, this record, Departures, I listened to it a couple times through. It's really got something. It's got kind of a haunting character to it. It's sort of like, it's even in some ways that it's mellow, you kind of can't turn away from it. And that, it really grabbed me.
I'm honored, man. Yeah, this is like definitely the late night labor of love. Like, you know, that for a lot of us, this last year, you couldn't sleep. I was struggling with like anxiety and all sorts of things. And for me, I would just like go to the studio late at night. And I feel that when I listen back to it, it feels like a late night kind of album.
Yeah, I can hear that too. I can absolutely, you know, so yeah, walk me through this whole last year for you, I guess, because, you know, you guys tour a lot, you do a lot of things, you know, and all of a sudden March comes around, things get shut down. Where were you at middle of March last year, and what kind of plans initially, you know, got crushed for you?
Yeah, so we were, like every band, we were on tour somewhere, right?
Yeah.
We had just come... It's odd to say it because it feels like I'm looking back and like, did we actually do that? We were on a rock boat with Need to Breathe and a bunch of other bands. And we were in the middle of the ocean in the Caribbean. And we were hearing rumors about this virus and this, that, the other. And we get to shore and fly home. And that was it. Just everything locked down right after that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I see that here. January 28th was the last day on the rock boat. And yeah, so at least you guys got to go home. You weren't, you know, no, it wasn't like, you can't dock, you know.
We weren't like mid-cycle because I have a lot of friends. They were like, they just put their record out and, you know, like, all right, let's do this. Colony House, Tyson Motzenbacher, Group Love, all these bands that great albums that really kind of didn't get their fair shake. Because yeah. It came out right before this whole thing locked down, you know?
That's my band, March 6th, dude.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, right there with you. Yeah, no, it sucked, man. It sucked. And yeah, everything we knew about what to do as a band, putting out an album, you put out an album and you tour. Or yeah. At minimum, you do, you know, whatever promo, you know, radio shows or what, you know, whatever you're supposed to do. It's like, okay, no, now actually you just sit at home and you figure out how to promote yourself on the internet, I guess, which we did. And, you know, which you guys have done too. You guys have done tons of live stream stuff. I think I just saw you did one just about a week ago.
Yeah.
For Beautiful Letdown, right?
So we're just about to do one for Beautiful Letdown later this month.
Okay.
Which, yeah, it came out, several years ago, I think 18 years ago, this month. And so, yeah, it's funny, like learning all these old songs, you're like, okay, how does this go again? And actually I'm doing a live stream today for the solo project. So,
oh, nice.
Got a couple friends going to join me and that's going to be good. I mean, I do think it is that thing. So I have a plaque back here. I hand painted a sign. I went crazy and I made this thing. I'm going to get up and show it to
you.
Yeah,
I'd love to see it.
Because I feel like it represents the year. It is a Hemingway quote from The Old Man and the Sea.
Okay.
And the quote is, I don't know if you can read it. Now is no time to think of what you do not have. Think of what you can do with what there is.
Yeah, man.
And I feel like that was like the year that we had. It was like, okay, think of what you can do with what there is. And so that's kind of, I believe that music has a power to bring people together. Music and sports are that place where you can have different ideologies, different ethnicities, different religious backgrounds, different politics, and you stand next to someone and like fist bump, hug, high five, sing arm in arm, and remember that we're not that different. And I feel like for me, we were like, okay, we still have a job to do. How do we bring people together even if we can't be in the same room? And so that's kind of what the live stream represents for me.
No, absolutely, man. You say that record came out 18 years ago and I can see sort of a fondness in your eyes. You know, you kind of looked up and you sort of smiled and, you know, the memories come flooding back, I'm sure, of what that time was like. And I'm surprised that you had to remember the songs. I feel like over the last 18 years, you would have played that record for another anniversary. Is this the first time you've done it?
Yeah, it's the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is fun. You know, it's fun to look. Those are things that we probably never would have done it if it wouldn't have been for the year that we've had. And so, again, I'm trying to look at the glass half full, the silver lining, you know. And I do think that there's so many things that came out of this that I don't want to miss the moment, you know, like it's not going to happen again. So, I'm thankful, for example, that I've been surfing more than I've ever surfed, you know, like usually we're on tour in January and this January was phenomenal. So I was able to be home for it. What a gift, right?
Right. No, for sure. And all the musicians I've talked to that are, you know, we're all around the same age. I'm not sure. I think you're a little older than me. I just turned 40.
Yep.
And you know, when you've been doing this a long time, this is the most time off at this point. I think almost everyone will say it's the most time off they've had. And there is a lot of beautiful things in the world that we've, you know, just unfortunately not been able to embrace as much as other people, you know, being home for you know, just all kinds of holidays and stuff too, and all that. And now all of a sudden, well, I guess we're home for them and we can't celebrate them, but that's besides the point. But you know, it really is true though. There is a lot of things, a lot of silver linings to take out of this thing, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, I don't know. I think for me, I feel so fortunate to be able to kind of, pour all the darkness and depression and frustration and anger and whatever else into the music and find a healthy outlet for it. I feel like that has helped me. I don't know what I would do without that, without being able to put it into a song and kind of successfully let it go. You know, I didn't think that was kind of what this solo project was for me, was like, okay, how do I enunciate this, present it, dig through this whatever darkness I'm feeling and get it out into the light, you know?
100%. 100%. You know, you talk about, you know, the record and the history that you have. And I wouldn't mind going back to the beginning and talking about kind of your early, you know, entry into the music world. I find it so interesting, you know, not only that you're in a band with your brother, but, you know, your father has been super supportive. I found his profile on his church page, where he talks about, you know, you guys and spending late hours in the studio and surfing is, you know, important to him in his life too. And I think that's a really cool thing. And I guess the foundation that you were built on, you know, with your family and that kind of translating into your career as well, it seems really important. And I think something that should be mentioned, you know, when we talk about kind of your entry into this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is funny. Like, first of all, even just talking about this in some form of like, that anyone would care about it is odd to me.
Oh yeah.
Cause it seems so pedantic and like, I don't know, like, but if, yeah, so I'm always open to talk about it. Like my upbringing, my dad, when I first started playing guitar, he taught me to play Stairway to Heaven because I wanted to learn Stairway and I love Zeppelin and the Beatles, which is the most unremarkable thing ever, right? Like your dad teaching you how to play Stairway is like, that sounds like pretty much any kid who learned how to play guitar. The difference being my dad is a pastor, and a lot of, I remember going to youth group, junior high, like playing Zeppelin riffs, and they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, like, you can't play that here.
Right.
That's the wrong flavor, the wrong brand. And I think the difference was my dad was like, oh, I mean, let's talk about the lyrics. Let's talk about, you know, what do you think about it? When he says, Gollum, the evil one, crept up and stole away with her. Like, he's, you know, like, what is that? Is that cool to reference Lord of the Rings? Is that weird? Is that great songwriting? Is it, you know, and I think just kind of rather than seeing it in this didactic binary code of like, you're with us or against us, good, bad, just thinking in terms of like helpful, unhelpful, that's kind of how we grew up. And, we played everywhere as kids. We'd play coffee shops, we'd play bars, we'd play, churches, we played bar mitzvahs, we played frat parties, you know, and it didn't really feel that weird to us. We were just like, yeah, here's another song. And I think it wasn't till later that we saw how people are a little bit more closed-minded that, right, in general,
right,
that people want to put boxes on things.
Right. Well, yeah. And I'm glad it wasn't your dad trying to dissect lyrics to, you know, the Lemon Song or something like that. But I love the way you squeeze my lemon. I wonder what that's about.
Yeah. Which wasn't actually his lyrics to
begin
with.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the little lesson.
That was an old blues standard. So you have
there you go.
Discuss whose lemon we're talking about at this point, you know.
There we go. But no, man. It's true, and it's a little bit cliche that the band, the Christian band from San Diego, you know, or like the more relaxed, like laissez-faire, like it's cool, you know. But I'm sure when you guys first toured, you know, into the Bible Belt and those areas, you must have seen how different, you know, everyone kind of still, you know, in a lot of ways, you're all like on the same side, right? But then people can start to put in rules in place and it can start to get a lot more, I don't know if militant's the right word, but different.
Yeah, you know, I think the funny thing is for me, I feel like it's such a larger conversation. Like to put the adjective Christian on something is something that people do all the time. That's Christian this, that's Christian that. And I'm a little bit more reticent to do it. I feel like it has to be like, it's more like question is like, is this representative of faith or a genre that's used to sell things?
Right.
You know, does that make sense? Like, am I using this to sell a toothpaste, or like, how can a chord be Christian? How can a guitar, is this a Christian beverage? You know, like it really gets really shady. I think it really comes down to how do we treat people? And that's ultimately, is it Christ-like or not? And then that's a lot more easy to discuss. Like, yeah, that guy, he represented himself in a way that felt loving and self-sacrificial.
Absolutely.
Rather than like, was that song, I don't know. It's very, very shady and gray in that area for me.
No, for sure. No, and while we're on the topic of your dad even wrote a couple books, including one called Never Say No, Raising Big Picture Kids. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Your dad wrote a book about how to raise kids, you know, seeing the big picture, and Never Say No. It sounds like that's pretty much right on, right? Like showing you Led Zeppelin, you know, obviously you are a big picture kind of dude too. So this is, I think that's really, really interesting. I don't know when he wrote the book, but it's cool. I love that.
No, he's a good guy. And I'm still really, really close with my folks. I think they were also supportive especially in the early days. I see like kind of band parents, because we were so young, we were just kids. They get really involved, like kind of heavy handed, start, you know, and there's no right or wrong way to do anything. I've got a daughter of my own. But I was really thankful that they kind of just let us go and just be like, yeah, go do it. You got it. You know, it was like that freedom. It felt like, I'm looking at other parents that are involved in their kids' lives in that way. And I'm really thankful that we were able to explore and make our own mistakes, I suppose.
For sure. I think it's changed so much too now. I mean, I just look at kids, you know, and I don't have any, but my sister has three, and I look at kind of what they're allowed to do or the rules placed on them, and it seems a lot crazier. Like, I remember being a kid and I don't know, I just go on my bike, no one really knew where I was going, and I'd come back before dark and that was that, you know? And it seems like these days, there's no way that happens anymore, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even, like, even just letting your kid like just wander around on the internet, that's scary enough, right?
That's true. That's probably where it's part of where it stems from, right?
Yeah. I mean, the world has changed a lot. And I try not to be reactionary and like Amish, you know, where you're like, nothing, we're just shutting it down,
right?
You know? but it is like, it is a thing where I do want to be thoughtful about the way that I'm interfacing with things, even trying to, is it healthy for me to be looking at the news every few minutes, you know, especially in this time of lockdown, I had to kind of make some boundaries and say, okay, I got to take a break from the news for a couple hours and be able to let my mind be at peace thinking about surfing. I mean, surfing was that thing for me. The ocean shut down for a while for us. They shut down the beaches and the ocean and everything. And when they reopened the beaches, it was this like, deep breath where I was like, okay, I'm going to make it. Cause that was my, my happy place, you know, where I could remind myself that there was a bigger story than this kind of screenshot, you know?
No, 100%. Yeah, no, I have that in my notes. You guys, literally in my notes, I have, you guys love surfing. And you know, I know you guys do the Bro-Am, you know, every year, and I mean, all the charity work you do, which I also think I have to give your father some props for that too, putting that kind of mindset in. You know, I know he likes to travel to underprivileged parts of the world, and that's something that you guys have, you know, really found important, I think, to give back to the community. And, you know, not just your community, every community over the all over the world that you can. Where does that come from? That not every band does that, you know?
I think there are a lot of bands that do it. I mean, I think I do think so. My heroes growing up were people that were finding a story that was bigger than themselves. And I feel like that only happens when you're able to give yourself away in ways that are meaningful to the people around you, to recognize that the community, the neighborhood you're in, needs you in a way that you are invaluable to that part of the world. And I mean, if we're going to talk about like the house I grew up in, this is a story that brags about my dad. I didn't know this story. I read about it in the paper.
Okay.
It was back when, you know, the weekly like zine that would come out about your hometown music scene. I'm sure it exists, but I haven't seen it for a long time because there's sure. No shows and
sure.
And everything's online. But this was back when those things existed. And in the article, there's this band, I think it was Gratitude. The band was Gratitude. And they were touring through Southern California, and it's told from their perspective, and their van broke down, and my dad sees the van and trailer, and he's like, oh, I know exactly what that is. He was in a band when he was young, and
yep.
And obviously from us touring for years and years, and he goes over and he's like, hey, can I help you guys? And they're like, yeah, I mean, not unless you can fix the engine, that this thing just died. And we have a show tonight at the Casbah, which is like our local epic spot that everyone's played. And he's like, well, hey, you can borrow my minivan. It's right over there. I mean, you might have to make a couple trips, but
wow,
just take it and bring it back here and put the keys in, you know, in the gas can and good luck with your show tonight.
Wow.
And I didn't find that out until the paper told that story. And I was just so proud of my dad. And I think that's kind of the house I grew up in, was like, hey, if you have this and you can share it with somebody, then let's go. And so that's the Bro-Am is basically our attempt to use music and surfing, which were the two things that kept me out of trouble when I was a kid, to help homeless and at-risk youth in our hometown. So we have a day that just celebrates them. Usually it's thousands and thousands of people on the beach in our hometown surfing. It's a big party, a lot of bands, epic people have played it. But of course the last year, and who knows, this year probably as well, it's been a virtual event that's still trying to raise money for these kids.
Awesome.
And you're invited. Maybe it'd be easier to attend this year because you can just tune in. But yeah, it's a blast, man. I love it.
Well, it's easy to surf in space, you know. I'm doing a great job.
You won't fall down.
Exactly. No, I've never attempted surfing. I mean, in Canada, not a lot of surfing happens up here. You know, I don't know anyone
that
surfs. I surfed
Canada once.
Oh, you have, probably out like Vancouver.
Vancouver Island. I happened to be there. I didn't have a wetsuit, but there's a guy coming in with a surfboard, and I had a pair of trunks, and I'm like, it's freezing, but I just want to be able to say I surfed Canada. So I paddled out in trunks and caught my one wave and
nice.
Said yes.
There you go.
I surfed Canada. But if you come to San Diego, I would love to teach you how to surf.
Oh, anytime. I will 100% give you a call about that.
Let's do it.
Yeah, man. I'm not going to be good. I'm not going to be good. when you guys go on tour, do you ever, you know, elsewhere in the world that has surfing, you ever stay a few days extra, come a few days early and try to, you know, hit up some surf places? You know, I think of like Australia, obviously, or maybe in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, we actually made a film about it a few years back called Fading West. and it features some of our favorite friends that are surfers as well, Tom Curran and Rob Achato and a bunch of heroes of ours. Yeah, we got to, you know, like when you have the chance to kind of do the layover in Bali for a couple of days,
right,
on your way back from India or something, you're like, yeah, you know, we probably should, you know, just for a couple of days. So yeah, there's the problem is, not too many epic surf spots in like the center of the US, which is where we do most of our touring, or Europe, you know, even like you really, it's like these weird places where you're like, yeah, we're probably the only band that's like, you know, played Bali 3 times, 4 times, you know, where you're like, yeah, who, you can't really make money doing that.
No,
but it's,
no,
it's fun.
True.
It's a blast.
That is a blast. Did you say you guys played India before?
Yeah. Yeah. We played India a couple times, South Africa. We went to Bangladesh one time to kind of, yeah. Yeah, it's been amazing. We try and do some of our touring based on what we can kind of sometimes bring awareness to what's going on around the world. So like we had a festival two festivals in India that we were playing, and then we got to go over to Bangladesh to see what this organization Food for the Hungry was doing, which they're awesome if you haven't checked them out. And yeah, so we got to jam with this indigenous Bangladeshi band that was like, they didn't speak English and we didn't speak their language, but it was just, I mean, those are the moments that I'll never forget. You know, it's how many shows have you played, but when do you ever get a chance to jam with these guys that you don't even know what the instrument's called that they're playing?
Yeah.
You
know? That's so rad. No, I love that. I love that. That's cool. No, I don't think I know of anybody that's been to India on tour before. Obviously, like, that's a place that I'm always interested in.
Yeah.
And like, not just because I love Indian food, because just it's, there's so many people there, you know, like a billion people live in this country. I know there's rock music fans there, you know, and they don't, nobody goes there. You think there's gotta be, you know, I would love just to see how excited people would be to see, you know, an American rock band play, you know, it'd be so cool for people.
No, it was wild. Both the festivals we did a tour there, and then we did a couple festivals. And then I've been there a couple times. And it is just an overload, like sight, smell, noises, like the heat, the people all around. Like, my first thought when COVID hit was like, oh, India, like that is a really tough place to try and, you know, social distance yourself, because there's no way, like you literally are within 2 feet of anyone at all times, you know?
I know. And they kept their numbers down for a while too, but inevitably it was bad. So, you know, you talk about doing songs with a Bangladeshian band. I want to talk about the song you did with Mandy Moore back in the day. I found that so interesting that part of the way that you guys transitioned from being, you know, a local band in the San Diego area to, you know, being on a major label was the Walk to Remember soundtrack, which at the time, I'm old enough to remember, you know, Mandy Moore was like a musical artist, and this was kind of like her foray into acting, and nobody really knew if this movie was going to be a flop, or obviously it turned into something pretty special. People really liked that movie. And here you guys are, somehow on this soundtrack. Basically, it's like a split record with you and Mandy Moore.
Yeah.
Which I found was super strange, super interesting, and I never really got an answer as to how that kind of shook out, because obviously that paved the way for your career in a lot of ways.
No, it totally did. So, I mean, it's all, like, we were the local band, you know, we were like the, you know, like you said, and my friend who I went to high school with that I used to surf with, and we used to go to concerts together. She was working for this guy in LA, and they were looking for a song for Mandy to sing during, that one scene where she sings a song, and this guy's like, you know, we're looking for this song, and she had barely just started working for him, and she's like, I think I got a song that could be good. And it turned out, you know, it was our song, is Only Hope. And that was kind of the guy that started the whole thing for us. You know, his name's John Lachey, and he's a great friend that put a ton of our songs in there and started kind of getting the word out about, you know, what we do. And yeah, it was definitely a huge start. And that whole thing was so funny. I remember walking the red carpet, and this guy, everyone's taking pictures, and it was so out of body. And this guy like takes a couple pictures, and then he looks at us and goes, wait, who are you guys? And we're like, well, you know, don't worry, you don't have to take a picture. You don't need this, you know?
Yeah. Anytime I've done any of those red carpet event things, I always just feel like such a poser, you know, like I don't belong here.
Oh, I mean, we literally came from like the 15 passenger van, drove up to Hollywood, and we're like, get out of the car. Then we went straight back out on tour, and you're like, did that happen? Was that a weird dream?
Well, I mean, you guys are Grammy winners. You got no one can ever take that away from you. That is pretty cool. Right. Yeah. It was about 10 years ago. You won a Grammy, but you know, that's anytime, you know, especially in the last 10 years, how the Grammys have changed so much. They don't just hand them out to rock bands anymore. That's pretty cool. What was that experience like?
Oh, that was wild. That same thing where you're like, what are we doing again? Yeah, I think for me, the Grammy and any of those kind of accolades kind of reinforce the idea that it doesn't matter as much as you think it does. You know, like it's like your birthday or something where you're like, whoa, how does it feel to be 15? You're like, I don't know. It kind of feels like 14, or, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, I just turned 40 2 days ago, and so I can relate to that, right?
Yeah.
I don't feel any 40? Different. No. I feel the same. I'm the same dumbass I was when I was 25.
Right.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
That's
yeah,
funny,
those are the things that for me, I think they kind of reinforce that. And it also makes me like, reinforces the idea that the live experience of music is way more important than the any form of like the external measures of success that are a little bit more subjective. Like you can't win a live show. It's like
not officially, no,
you just do it, and one guy up at the front is just loving it, and he's just like, that was the best. And the guy at the back was like, are you kidding me? I hate that band. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what's so beautiful about it.
Yeah,
it's this subjective thing where you're like, yeah, you take what you want from it. And like, I think for me, the takeaway of any of those awards is the idea that I love my job. I love playing music for people in the room, then and there. You know, that's such a gift.
Yeah, man. 100%. So speaking of Grammy nominated, I know this is probably old news to you, and maybe you don't laugh anymore when you see this, but I want to play this for the people. I don't know if you know what I'm going to do yet. I'm going to share my screen. And I'm going to play this awesome thing that you guys did a couple years ago that made me laugh and still makes me laugh. Here we go. I think this is going to work. Yeah. I think we have audio. So much more have we lost our style. I can't turn it off yet. The guitar is too good. So yeah, that there it is. Meant to Live metal version, which
that's right. Yeah, yes. We put that out on April Fool's Day, and people were pissed that we didn't come out with a metal record right after that. They were like, "What? Come on!"
It's just funny because it's like it's pretty good, you know. whose idea was that to put that together and like who put it together, you know, and everything.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think we all thought it would be really funny, and then when we finally got it pretty close and it was time to sing on it, it was like, oh no, we're going all the way there. All right, here, let's do this. We were like laughing so hard while we were doing it. I remember like that was the hardest part, was getting a take where it was like not you know, broken out with laughter halfway through.
Was that you doing those screams?
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's pretty good, man. Not bad.
I love screaming. Yeah.
Oh, I love that so much, man. So what's the plan now with you guys? Obviously, like, it's been a little while since you put out a new record. You have this, you know, obviously the solo stuff that is happening, but, you know, the fact that you can't tour like you usually do, you know, you do a live stream or whatever. Does that speed up maybe the cycle of creativity at all? Is that even possible to do?
I mean, I think I'm, there's so many things involved. First of all, I love writing songs. So I write songs all the time. I'll write like 80, 100 songs for a project. And
wow.
So there's like tons. I see it more like a diary, or like, every day I'll go surfing if I get a chance. If I get a chance to write a song, I'll write a song, you know? I don't see them as it doesn't have to be the song, you know? It's just it's a discipline, you know?
Okay.
And So with the Switchfoot, you know, with being on lockdown and having all these mixed feelings, let's call them, the songs were this ready-made outlet where it's like, okay, yeah, let's find some place for all this negativity. And that's kind of what I did during a lot of the quarantine. And so the solo project, certainly a part of that. And right now we're actually working with Tony Berg, who is an incredible musician, producer. He's done stuff with, Phoebe Bridgers and Blake Mills and a bunch of people. And Chad Blake is going to mix the record. And we're so pumped about the next Switchfoot project, which maybe comes out in 3 or 4 months or something like that. So awesome. The concept being, I don't know what the world's going to be like tomorrow. I'm just going to keep making music. The part of the world that I can control, I'm going to make it beautiful.
Now, okay, I'm a songwriter too, and I'm a slow songwriter. I don't write very quickly. When I hear about people saying this, like, oh yeah, I wrote 50 songs or whatever. You just said you wrote 80 to 100 for a project. Now, do you mean you actually wrote 80 to 100 like completed songs all the way done, or is that like 80 to 100 like ideas? Like you got a verse and a chorus, minute long clip kind of thing. Like are we talking about completed lyrics? Like I know it's a little bit of a technical question, but I am actually curious about that.
So, it depends. If you're talking like voice memos, like I got 80 to 100 ideas, and you're like, well, that doesn't really count.
Well, I mean, it kind of counts. But is that what you mean, like, or do you mean you have like 80 demos that you've actually recorded, like 3-minute songs or whatever? I mean,
So we used to do, so for Hello Hurricane, we did like full flushed out songs. Like it was like intro, verse, chorus, verse two, chorus, bridge, chorus, outro, like, and the drum sounds, and there were like probably 80 of those.
Yeah.
And we wow. realized that like, you kind of know whether you love the song or not. Like the second verse and the bridge aren't going to really like turn the song around. You know, like if you're like, you know, I hate that intro. I hate the verse. The chorus sucks. But you know what? The second verse, I think, can make the record. So we started doing this thing where we do just like intro, first verse, and chorus. And then that, and really like spend a chunk of time making sure that it, that you know what it is, as a demo. And then, so that's basically what we would do. Like that was, that's, and if we really felt it, we would continue and flush the song out. But
right.
that would be like our understanding of, do we love it or not? Because I mean, I think, when you make an album, so much of it is like, how do these songs get along? How do they fit with each other? You know?
Yeah.
Do they feel like they're a good family, or is this guy just, he's a good song, but he does not fit with this, you know? And I think that's as important as how good the song is.
Absolutely. No, that's a great explanation. Thank you for that. So what's next? So what's next though? Are you guys doing more live streams after the beautiful letdown one? Are you hoping to do some shows? Is anything actually on the books?
We have, I mean, I'm sure like every band does, a tour that is planned, tentative, with some friends of ours. It's not public yet, but mm-hmm. we're hoping that that will come through for the fall. And we'll see. I, at the beginning of all this, I might have been a lot more nervous and weary and freaked out. And now I'm kind of like, it'll happen when it happens.
Yeah.
You know, and but yeah, so that's, we're hoping to get the album out in a couple months and then go on tour in the fall. See what happens.
Yeah.
Who knows? Even as I'm saying that, I'm like, is that crazy? Is that really going to happen?
Well, I mean, when you booked it, you know what I mean? When you talked about doing it, it probably wasn't as crazy as maybe it's starting to get now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I guess now like the numbers are, at least here, I know they're falling a little bit now. Like 3 weeks ago, they sure weren't, you know? So yeah. I don't know. I guess it's always wait and see, but yeah. it is. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I look back at when it all started in, you know, middle of March last year, and the agent said, okay, well, we're going to reschedule the shows for July. And I was like, yeah. July? I was like, I don't think we need that long. Like, let you know, like, how about May? You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And it's so funny how we were just both completely, you know, just in denial of the whole, yeah. of the whole thing.
Well, no, I don't even know if it's denial. I think it's we're going through something that we've never been through anything like it before.
Yeah.
You know, it's truly like this, it has no parallel. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's denial. I just think we're all ignorant, you know, and 2 months from now, we'll know what happened now, you know?
I know.
It is a strange, strange thing to walk through. You know, it's definitely as people that are in the industry of bringing people together, where you're like, okay, how's that going to work for you?
Man, I know. So a fan question here, and I encourage if anybody in the chat has a question for John, post it up. This is one that's maybe pretty interesting, maybe not for you, but you've kept the same members the entire time. That's pretty unheard of. What do you think makes your band different from other bands? Okay,
it's true, that is right? A good question. I don't know. I think having a brother in the band helps mm-hmm. because he is, you know, it kind of forced us all to be at that level of of honesty. And I mean, no matter what, you're going to see your brother for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So you got to keep it together, you know? And I think the funny thing is, for me, with all of these friendships that have formed, they mean more than whatever entity Switchfoot is. You know, the friendship is way more valuable than some sort of commodity. And I feel like that I would, you know, take a bullet for them. That's easy. Sometimes in the creative space, you kind of have to take some bullets and find right. ways through things, you know, and that's not easy, or I don't know how we've done it, but it's certainly a conscious effort to make sure that we're continuing to do that.
No, absolutely. I mean, I just imagine, I don't have a brother, but I imagine if you spend all that time with them in the band creatively on the road, and then, you know, the tour's over and it's like, oh yeah, are you going to be at mom and dad's tonight for dinner?
Yeah.
Like, does that ever get a little bit like, I'm a little sick of you, man. I have to see you all the time. And you're also my brother.
Yeah. I mean, there were times where we went through a really dark period where we were like, yeah, pretty much at each other's throats, you know? And, you know, I mean, I think part of that is natural, and having to learn how to fight in a way that brings you through it, rather than just on some sort of spin cycle where you just continue that tension and that frustration and anger. And so I mean, I still have so much to learn, but that there was a period that I'm thankful that we're not in now that was really, really heavy. But I think the ego can get in the way of a lot, you know, and the moment you take that out of the way and say, all right, the best idea win, let's go. Then I think you can cover some ground a lot quicker.
Yeah, I totally agree. And here's another question too. I'm going to put it up on the screen. I don't know if you can see that.
Yes,
oh,
got
that
it.
Actually, the wrong one I clicked on. I hadn't even read that one yet because it just came in from Kebrock, but thank you. But Music Stutz says, who's the person you have met or heard of who you were most surprised to hear they were a Switchfoot fan?
The two musical collaborations that I've done that people might not be like, might scratch their heads at, Meatloaf has a John Foreman song on his Bad Out of Hell 3, I think it is. And, Cypress Hill they did a remix with Meant to Live. This Is How We Rock is the title of it. And
cool.
It ends with a gunshot. It's like the toughest we've ever been, but we, you know.
I love Cypress Hill.
Yeah, dude. I got a chance to share the stage with a couple of those guys with, Tom Morello used to do these things where he'd bring everybody together, and somehow I got in his Rolodex, and he'd call me up for these things. And they were filled with, like, it was like, you know, Perry Farrell, Slash, yeah. Ben Harper, you know, Cypress Hill, and me. And it'd be like, sure. I mean, I'll, you know, like tiny yeah. little club. But yeah, the Cypress Hill, those guys were always really, really cool.
That's cool. We played a festival with them once. I don't remember much about it except that I went on, like, I was able to go on the stage to watch the band because, you know, I had a pass or whatever. I got to be like a cool guy over there, you know.
Oh yeah.
And they had this giant inflatable mushroom, like magic
yeah.
mushroom on the stage that was so big, like it was obviously just like a one size fits all festival mushroom, I guess. But
yeah.
the stage wasn't that big, so it was just ridiculous. Like, everyone was like, had to go around the mushroom. And of course, I've never smelled, like, there's never been more weed smoke around me in my life. Like, I was just, I felt like
they
I was like floating
them,
in space, dude.
I thought when we played with them, they had an inflatable, like, weed.
Oh yeah.
Like leaf. So pot leaf. So maybe they have interchangeable. Maybe it depends on the vibe. Like, what are you feeling, guys? You know?
Exactly. Oh, that's very funny. With a couple more questions, if you don't mind sticking around, and I'll let you go. where was it here? This is kind of maybe interesting. What is the most rewarding tour you've done? You've done a lot of tours. And rewarding can mean a lot of different things too, right?
What did you say?
And rewarding can mean a lot of different things too.
It can. I know that's such a strange thing because I think the most rewarding, the first two things that come to mind, we got a chance to go to South Africa and we helped out with these kids outside of Cape Town in a town called Stellenbosch. And that's the first thing that came to mind was like planting gardens and hanging out with these kids. And I got a chance to record these kids in this village and they were singing and dancing and we just had mics that we borrowed from the university. And that was a highlight. It's funny because rewarding is, as I'm thinking of it, it kind of translates in my head as a ton of work, but it actually rewards you for the work. The other tour that I'm thinking of is I'm in a side project called Fiction Family, and we did a tour where the van broke down literally every day. And that's, I don't know why those are the things that pop in my head, but those would be the two most rewarding tours that I've ever been a part of.
So, okay, you have to explain how the van breaking down every day was rewarding.
It was this thing humbling, where it galvanized all of us.
Right.
We had an equal, we had this common enemy and we were like going to make it through, you know, and it was freezing. It was like one of the coldest winters on record. Everywhere we went, it was like, this is the coldest day on record. And the van wouldn't start and we'd be out there in the cold. I stabbed the guy in the ear by accident. Like all sorts of crazy stuff happened, but we made it through and it was one of the most rewarding tours I've been a part of.
There you go. I love that answer. And yeah, what is that big hatch behind you, John?
Okay.
You said you built a submarine.
We did. We were like, we were going to go on tour like everyone else. And we said, well, let's have our friend who's an incredible, craftsman, woodsman. He had all this spare wood and he's like, I'll put it up at your studio. And then the place next door to us said, hey, we're getting rid of this thing. Do you want it? And we said, yes, we do. So that is the door to 2022. We're going to open it someday. We're going to get there.
I love it. There you go. There you go. That's great. That's great. Do you know what the Bangladeshi band was called? Someone's asking if they're actually curious.
It was way outside of Dhaka and they were, I don't know that they've ever recorded anything. They were just a local group.
Yeah.
Like maybe a couple hours from Dhaka I'm in my ignorance feeling like the middle of nowhere. So I don't know I'm sure they had a name, but I don't know if they've ever recorded any music.
Right. Well, you said they didn't speak English too, so that would have been pretty hard to communicate.
Yeah, it's kind of shut down the whole language barrier, right?
Absolutely. Well, John, we did the thing, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on here on Twitch with everybody. Thanks to the chat for asking some questions and listening to John and myself chat. And anything else to tell the people before I let you go? Anything we missed?
No, I mean, I'm always, whenever people, you know, I love chatting. You're good at what you do, Shane. Keep doing it. And I really feel thankful, you know, to be able to do this. And I'm thankful for all the people that have listened to the record. So if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. And I hope it moves you in a year where none of us are really moving that much.
Yes, yes. No, the new John Foreman record is called Departures. It just came out. Just came out on Friday, and it's got a lot of vibe to it, man. There's a lot to take away from it. It kind of takes you on this ride, and I really enjoy it. So, yeah, everybody, make sure you check it out. Departures from my friend John Foreman. Thank you, pal. I'll let you go. Thanks again.
Peace.
All right,
have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
So there it is with John. What a lovely fellow. That was super cool. I really do appreciate him taking the time, coming on live with me on Twitch and doing the whole thing. And thank you everybody for tuning in, whether it's just now listening to this podcast, if you're driving or at work or sitting around, or whether you dove into the trenches of twitch.tv/ShaneTold to watch this one live. It's all good. But seriously, yes, Twitch is a thing now. I know I'm pushing it really hard because it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun to have the interaction with you guys too, right as I'm doing this. So don't sleep on that. It's a good thing. Next week, of course, I'll be back right here on the podcast feed with a brand new episode. And don't forget, every Friday, Mike Howell and I will be talking new music. We are calling it New Noise. Shout out to Refuse, the legends. We're calling it New Noise now. Every Friday, check it out. And we do that live on Twitch too on Wednesdays. So if you want a head start on that, or you want to interact with me and Mike, you can do that as well. Time has been changing. We've done 6 o'clock a few times, 8 p.m. a few times, 3 p.m. a few times. So it varies. Keep your ear to the ground, but you'll get notifications if you follow us on Twitch. So do that, okay? Now, we all know the Switchfoot classics, and they got so many great songs, but I want to play a track from John Foreman's solo album, which is out now, Departures. It's a good one. I really enjoy it. Here is a track called A Place Called Earth on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next time. Oh,
the borderlines. Oh, how I long for heaven. days